No one responded, though my friends all glared at me like, "Dang it, Magnus." "Just hypothetically," I said, "if we had a Magnus Chase, why would you kill him?"
"Because I promised my wife Ran," Aegir cried. "For some reason, she hates that guy."
The nine daughters nodded vigorously, muttering,
"Hates him a lot. Yes, tons."
"Ah." I was glad I was drenched in mead. Maybe it would hide the sweat popping up on my forehead.
"And where is your lovely wife?" "Not here tonight," Aegir said. "She's out collecting trash in her nets."
"Thank gods," I said. "I mean, thank gods we at least get to spend some quality time with the rest of you." Aegir tilted his head.
"Yes. Well, daughters, I suppose you should set extra places at the table for our guests. I'll talk to our chef about cooking up those juicy prisoners."
He waved toward one of the side doors, which swung open by itself. Inside was a vast kitchen. When I saw what was suspended above the oven, it took all my willpower not to scream like a wave giantess. Hanging in two matching extra-large canary cages were our long-range reconnaissance experts, Blitzen and Hearthstone. Chapter 9. I become a temporary vegetarian. That awkward moment when you lock eyes with two friends hanging in cages in a giant's kitchen, and one of them recognizes you and begins to shout your name, but you do not want your name shouted. Blitzen staggered to his feet, gripped the bars of his cage, and yelled,
"Magnificent!" I bellowed over him. "What beautiful specimens!"
I jogged toward the cages, Sam and Alex on my heels. Aegir frowned.
"Daughters, see to our other guests."
He made a sweeping take-out-the-trash gesture toward Mallory and TJ, who were still trying to keep our semi-conscious berserker from face-planting in the kelp. Then the sea god followed us into the kitchen. The appliances were all twice human size. The oven knobs alone would have made decent dinner plates. Hearthstone and Blitzen, looking unharmed but humiliated, dangled over the four-burner cooktop, their cages knocking against a tile backsplash that was painted with "Buon Appetito" in garish red cursive. Hearthstone wore his usual black biker outfit, his candy-striped scarf the only flourish of color. His pale face and white blonde hair made it difficult to tell if he was anemic or terrified or just mortified by the "Buon Appetito" sign. Blitzen straightened his navy blue blazer, then made sure his mauve silk dress shirt was properly tucked into his jeans. His matching handkerchief and ascot were a little askew, but the dude looked pretty good for a prisoner who was on today's dinner menu. His curly black hair and beard were well-trimmed. His dark complexion coordinated beautifully with the iron bars of his cage. If nothing else, Aegir should have let him go for being a fellow snazzy dresser. I used a quick flurry of sign language to warn them, "Don't say my name. Aegir will kill me." I spelled out the god's name since I didn't know what name sign we might use for him. Frowny, Beer Man, or H for hipster were all logical choices. The god appeared at my side.
"They are magnificent specimens," he agreed. "We always try to have a fresh catch of the day in case guests stop by."
"Right. Very smart," I said. "But do you normally eat dwarves and elves? I didn't think gods..."
"Gods?"
Aegir barked a laugh.
"Well, there's your mistake, little mortal. I'm not one of those namby-pamby Aesir or Vanir gods. I'm a Jotun deity. 100% giant."
I hadn't heard the term namby-pamby since third grade PE class with Coach Wicket, but I seemed to recall it not being a compliment. "So,
You do eat dwarves and elves?
Sometimes.
Aegir sounded a bit defensive.
And the occasional troll or human. Though I draw the line at hobgoblin. Too gamey. Why do you ask?
He narrowed his eyes.
Do you have special dietary restrictions?
Sam, again, was quickest on the draw.
Yes, actually. I'm Muslim.
Aegir winced.
I see. Sorry. Yes, I don't think dwarves are halal. I'm not sure about elves.
They're not either, Sam said. In fact, it's Ramadan, which means I need to break my fast in the company of dwarves and elves, rather than eating them or being around anyone who does eat them. It's strictly forbidden.
I was pretty sure she was making that up, but what did I know? I suppose she was counting on Aegir knowing even less about Quranic restrictions than I did.
What a pity, our host sighed. And the rest of you?
I'm a vegetarian, I said, which wasn't true, but hey, falafel was a vegetable. I glanced at Blitz and Hearth. They gave me 4 enthusiastic thumbs up.
And I have green hair.
Alex spread his hands like, what are you gonna do?
I'm afraid eating dwarves or elves goes against my beliefs, but I very much appreciate the offer.
Aegir glowered, as if we were testing the limits of his culinary hospitality. He stared at Blitzen and Hearthstone, now leaning casually against the bars of their cages, and trying to look as non-halal as possible.
So much for the catch of the day. Aegir grumbled. But we always do our best to accommodate our guests. Eldir?
He yelled the last word so loudly, I jumped and hit my head on the oven door handle. A side door swung open, and an old man shuffled out of the pantry in a cloud of smoke. He was dressed in a white chef's outfit, complete with poofy hat, but his clothes seemed to be in the process of combusting. Flames danced across his sleeves and apron. Smoke streamed from his collar like his chest was coming to a boil. Sparks wormed through his gray eyebrows and beard. He looked about 600 years old. His expression so sour, he might have spent that entire time smelling terrible things.
What is it?
He snapped.
I was preparing my elfish salt rub.
We'll need something different for dinner. Aegir ordered. No elf, no dwarf.
What?
Eldir grumbled.
Our guests have food restrictions. Halal, vegetarian, green hair friendly.
And it's Ramadan, Sam added. So you'll need to free those prisoners so they can break my fast with me.
Humph,
said Eldir.
Expect me to.
Mutter, mutter.
Short notice,
mutter, mutter.
Green hair friendly menu? I may have some kelp patties in the freezer.
He tromped back into the pantry, still complaining and smoldering. I don't mean to be rude, I said to Aegir. But is your chef on fire?
Oh, Eldir has been like that for centuries. Ever since my other servant, Fimavang, got killed by Loki, which left Eldir with twice as much work and made him burning mad.
A little bubble of hope formed in my chest. Killed by Loki, you say?
Yes, Aegir frowned. Surely you heard how that scoundrel disgraced my hall.
I glanced at Sam and Alex like, hey guys, Aegir is another enemy of Loki. Then I remembered that Sam and Alex were both children of Loki. Aegir might not like my friends any more than he liked people named Magnus Chase.
Lord Aegir, Sam said, that time Loki disgraced your hall, was that the Feast of the Gods?
Yes, yes, Aegir said. A complete disaster. The gossip bloggers had a field day with it.
I could almost see Sam's mind working. If she'd been Eldir, steam would have been pouring from the edges of her hijab.
I remember the story, Sam said.
She grabbed Alex's arm.
I have to pray. Alex needs to help me.
Alex blinked.
I do?
Lord Aegir, Sam continued. May I use a corner of your hall for a quick prayer?
The sea god tugged on his vest.
Well, I suppose.
Thanks.
Sam and Alex scurried out of the kitchen. I hoped they were going to formulate a cunning plan to get us all out of Aegir's hall alive. If Sam was really just going to pray, well, I wondered if she'd ever tried to say a Muslim prayer in the home of a Norse god. Sorry, Jotun deity, before. I was afraid the entire place might collapse from religious paradox. Aegir stared at me. That awkward dinner party silence when you've tried to serve dwarf and elf to a vegetarian.
I'm going to retrieve some mead from the cellar, he said at last. Please tell me you and your friends don't have dietary restrictions against mead.
I think we're good, I said, because I did not want to see a grown Jotun cry.
Thank the waves.
Aegir dug a set of keys from his vest pocket and tossed them to me.
Unlock the dinner. I mean the prisoners, would you? Then make yourself...
He waved vaguely toward the feast hall, then stomped off, leaving me to imagine how he might have finished that sentence. Comfortable? Scarce? A sandwich? I climbed the oven and freed Blitz and Hearth from their canary cages. We had a tearful reunion on the front left burner.
Kid!
Blitzen gave me a hug.
I knew you'd come rescue us!
Actually, I didn't know you guys were here. I used sign language as I talked, for Hearthstone's benefit, though it had been several weeks and my hands were slow. You get out of practice fast.
But I'm really glad I found you.
Hearthstone snapped his fingers for attention.
I'm glad too, he signed.
He patted the bag of runes at his belt.
Stupid cages were magic-proof. Blitzen was crying a lot.
I was not,
Blitzen protested, signing along.
You were.
I was not, Hearthstone said.
You were.
At that point, the ASL conversation deteriorated into the two of them poking each other in the chest.
Guys, I interrupted. What happened? How did you end up here?
Long story, Blitz said. We were waiting for you guys at the lighthouse, minding our own business.
Fighting a sea serpent, Hearth signed. Doing nothing wrong, Blitz said.
Hitting a serpent on the head with rocks.
Well, it was threatening us, Blitz said. Then this wave came up and swallowed us.
Wave contained 9 angry women. Serpent was their pet.
How was I supposed to know that?
Blitz grumbled.
The serpent didn't look like it was trying to play fetch. But that's not important, kid. We found out some information on our reconnaissance, and it isn't good.
Guests!
Aegir called from main hall.
Come! Join us for mead and food.
Put a pin in that, Hearthstone signed, poking Blitz in the chest one last time.
Back in the days when we were 3 homeless guys on the streets of Boston, if somebody had called us for dinner, we would have come running. Now we trudged over reluctantly. This was one free meal I wasn't so pumped about. The 9 daughters of Aegir hustled about, setting the table with plates and forks and goblets. Aegir hummed as he fiddled with a rack of mead kegs, each labeled with runes. TJ, Mallory, and Halfborn were already seated, looking very uncomfortable in their red coral seats, with empty chairs spaced between them. Halfborn Gunderson, more or less conscious now, kept blinking and staring at his surroundings like he hoped he was dreaming. Over by the big banana, Samira finished her prayers. She rolled up her portable rug, had a brief, urgent conversation with Alex, then they both came over to join us.
If Sam did have a brilliant plan, I was glad it didn't involve her and Alex turning into dolphins, yelling, "See you, suckers!" and escaping on their own. The dining table looked like it had been made from the world's largest mast, cut in half lengthwise and folded out to make two leaves. Overhead, suspended from the rafters by an anchor chain, was a sea glass chandelier. Instead of candles or electric lights, glowing souls of the dead swirled in oversized sconces, just to set the mood, I guessed. I was about to sit down between Blitz and Hearth when I realized there were name tags at the place settings. Dwarf, Crone, Elf, Hevering, Green Headscarf. I found mine on the other side of the table. Blonde Guy. Great. We had assigned seating. A daughter of Aegir sat down on either side of me. According to the name tags, the lady on my left was Kolga. The one on my right... oh boy. Apparently her name was... Blodughada. I wondered if that was the sound her mom had made on anesthesia after giving birth to daughter number 9. Maybe I could just call her Blode. "Hi," I said. Blode smiled. Her teeth were stained red. Her wavy hair was flecked with blood.
"Hello. It was a pleasure dragging you under the sea."
"Yeah, thanks." Her sister Kolga leaned in. Frost started to form on my forearm. Kolga's dress appeared to be woven from ice shards and slush.
"I hope we get to keep them, sister," she said. "They'd make fine tortured spirits."
Blode cackled. Her breath smelled like fresh ground beef just out of the fridge.
"Yes, indeed. Perfect for our chandelier."
"Appreciate the offer," I said, "but we actually have a pretty full calendar."
"Where are my manners?" Blode said. "In your language, I am called Blood Red Hair. My sister here is Freezing Wave. And your name is..."
She frowned at my card.
"Blonde Guy?"
I didn't see how that was any worse than Blood Red Hair or Bigly. "You can call me Jimmy," I offered. "In your language, that's... Jimmy." Blode didn't look satisfied with that.
"There's something about you."
She sniffed my face.
"Have you sailed over my blood-red waters in a naval battle before?"
"Pretty sure not."
"Perhaps my mother, Ran, described you to me. But why would she?"
"Guests!" Aegir boomed, and I had never been happier for an interruption. "Here is my first micro-brew of the evening. This is a peach lambic mead that makes a lovely aperitif. I welcome your comments after you try it." His 9 daughters oohed and awed as Aegir hefted the mead cask and carried it around the table, pouring everyone a serving. "I think you'll find this has a fruity edge," Aegir said. "With just a hint of..."
"Magnus Chase!"
Blode yelled, surging to her feet and pointing at me.
"This is Magnus Chase!"
Chapter 10. Can we talk about mead? Typical. Somebody says fruity edge, and immediately my name comes to mind. Come on, people. A little respect. The daughters of Aegir shot to their feet. Some picked up steak knives, forks, or napkins to stab, poke, or strangle us with. Aegir screamed, "Magnus Chase? What is this deception?" My friends and I didn't move a muscle. We all knew how guest rights worked. We still might be able to talk our way out of a fight. But once we drew our weapons, we stopped being considered guests and started being the catch of the day. against an entire family of Jotun deities on their home turf, I didn't like our odds.
"Wait," I said,
as calmly as I could, with a woman named Blood-Red Hair holding a knife over me.
"We're still guests at your table. We haven't broken any rules."
Steam rolled beneath the brim of Aegir's Panama hat. His gold-rimmed glasses fogged up. Under his arm, the mead cask began to creak like a pecan in a nutcracker.
"You lied to me," Aegir snarled. "You said you weren't Magnus Chase."
"You're going to break your cask," I warned. That got his attention. Aegir shifted the mead cask forward and held it in both arms like a baby.
"Guest rights do not apply. I granted you a place at my table under false pretenses."
"I never actually said I wasn't Magnus Chase," I reminded him.
"Besides, your daughters also brought us here because we mentioned mead."
Kolga snarled.
"And because you have an ugly yellow ship."
I wondered if everyone could see my heart beating through my shirt. It definitely felt that strong.
"Right, but also mead. We're here to talk about mead."
"We are?"
Halfborn asked. Mallory looked like she would have hit him, except there was a sea giantess in the way.
"Of course we are, you oaf!"
"So you see," I continued, "that wasn't a false pretense. That pretense was completely true." The daughters of Aegir muttered to themselves, unable to counter my flawless logic. Aegir cradled his cask.
"What exactly do you have to say about mead?"
"I'm glad you asked." Then I realized I had no answer. Once again, Samira to the rescue.
"We will explain," she promised. "But stories are better told over dinner. With good mead, are they not?"
Aegir stroked his cask affectionately.
"An aperitif with a fruity edge."
"Exactly," Sam agreed.
"So let's break our fast together. If you are not completely satisfied with our explanations at the end of the dinner, then you can kill us."
"He can?" TJ asked. "I mean, sure. He can." On my right, Blode's claw-like fingernails dripped with red salt water. On my left, a miniature hailstorm swirled around Kolga. Interspersed between my friends, the other seven daughters snarled like Tasmanian devil waterspouts. Blitzen put his hands on his chainmail vest. After getting stabbed by the Skolfnung sword a few months ago, he was a little sensitive about knife attacks. Hearthstone's eyes flicked from face to face, trying to keep track of the conversation. Lip-reading a single person was hard enough. Trying to read an entire room was nearly impossible. Mallory Keene gripped her mead goblet, ready to imprint its decorative design on the nearest giantess's face. Halfborn frowned sleepily, no doubt convinced now that this was all a dream. TJ tried to look inconspicuous as he dug into his pack of firing caps, and Alex Fierro just sat back calmly, sipping his peach lambic mead. Alex needed no preparation for battle. I'd seen how fast he could draw his garrote. The sea god Aegir was the tipping point. All he had to say was, "Kill them," and we were cooked like honey mead. We'd fight ferociously, no doubt, but we would die.
"I don't know," Aegir mused. "My wife said to kill you if I ever saw you. I was to drown you slowly, revive you, then drown you again."
That sounded like Rand talking.
"Great Lord," Blitzen chimed in, "did you swear a formal oath to kill Magnus Chase?"
"Well, no," Aegir admitted. "But when my wife asks..."
"You have to consider her wishes, of course," Blitz agreed. "But you also have to weigh that against guest rights, eh? And how can you be sure what to do until you've given us time to tell our whole story?"
"Let me kill them, father,"
growled the daughter with exceptionally big hands.
I will grasp them until they scream.
Silence, grasping wave, Aegir commanded.
Let me do the honors, said another daughter, throwing her plate to the floor. I will pitch them into Jormungand's mouth.
Hold, pitching wave, Aegir frowned. The dwarf has a point. This is a quandary. He stroked his keg. I waited for him to say, my mead cask is angry, and when my mead cask is angry, people die. Instead, finally, he heaved a sigh. It would be a shame to waste all this good mead. We will eat and drink together. You will tell me your story, paying special attention to how it relates to mead. He gestured to his daughters to be seated again. But I warn you, Magnus Chase, if I decide to kill you, my vengeance shall be terrible. I am a Jotun deity, a primordial force. Like my brothers fire and air, I, the sea, am a raging power that will not be contained. The kitchen door burst open. In a cloud of smoke, Eldir appeared, his beard still smoldering and his chef's hat now on fire. In his arms was a leaning tower of covered platters.
Who had the gluten-free meal?
He growled. Gluten-free? Aegir asked. I don't think we had gluten-free.
That's mine, said Blode.
She noticed my expression and scowled defensively.
What? I'm on an all-blood diet.
That's fine, I squeaked. Okay, then, Aegir said, taking charge of the orders. Halal meal? That is Samira's. The vegetarian is Magnus Kill-Him-Later Chase. The green hair entree?
Right here,
said Alex, which was probably unnecessary. Even in a room filled with sea giantesses, he was still the only one present with green hair. Platters were distributed. Mead was poured. Right, Aegir said, lowering himself into his throne. Everybody good?
Got one left,
Eldir yelled.
The Buddhist meal?
That's me, said Aegir. Don't stare, I told myself, as the primordial deity uncovered his platter of tofu and bean sprouts. This is all completely normal. Now, where was I? Aegir said. Oh, yes, a raging power that cannot be contained. I will rip you all limb from limb. The threat would have been more frightening if he hadn't been waving a steamed snow pea at us. Alex sipped from his goblet.
Can I just say that this mead is excellent? If I'm not mistaken, it has a fruity edge. How do you brew it?
Aegir's eyes lit up. You have a discerning palate. You see, the secret is in the temperature of the honey. Aegir began to hold forth. Alex nodded politely and asked more questions. I realized he was buying us time, hoping to draw out the meal while we thought of amazing things to say about mead. But I was fresh out of mead-related ideas. I glanced at Blode's plate. Big mistake. She was slurping away at a large red gelatin mold. I turned the other direction. Kolga's meal was a plate of different colored snow cones, arranged in a fan like peacock feathers. Kolga noticed me looking and snarled, her teeth like chiseled ice cubes. The temperature dropped so fast, frost crystals crackled in my ear canals.
What are you staring at, Magnus Chase? You can't have my snow cones.
No, I was just wondering, what side are you guys fighting on in Ragnarok?
She hissed.
The sea swallows everything.
I waited for more. That seemed to be her entire battle plan.
Okay, I said. So you're kind of neutral? That's cool.
Cool is good. Cold is better.
Right. But your dad isn't friends with Loki.
Of course not. After that horrible flighting, Loki disgraced this hall, the gods, my father, even my father's mead.
Right. The flighting. The words seemed familiar. I was pretty sure I'd seen it on the TV screen in Valhalla, but I had no idea what it meant. I don't suppose you've heard the name Bulwark? I asked, pressing my luck. Or what it might have to do with mead? Kolga sneered at me as if I were a fool.
Bulwark was the alias of the mead thief, of course.
The mead thief? That sounded like the title of a really bad novel to me.
The one who stole Kvasir's mead, Kolga said. The only mead my father cannot brew. Bah, you're clueless. I'll look forward to stuffing your soul in our chandelier.
She went back to enjoying her snow cones. Kvasir. Great. I asked about one name I didn't know, and I got another name I didn't know. But I felt like I was getting close to something important. Some combination of puzzle pieces that would explain Uncle Randolph's journal, give me his plan for beating Loki, and maybe even provide a mead-based solution for getting us out of this hall alive. Aegir continued holding forth about mead brewing, explaining to Alex the virtues of staggered yeast nutrients and hydrometers. Alex heroically managed to look interested. I caught Hearthstone's eye across the table. I signed, "What is a flyting? He frowned. "Contest." He raised his index finger and twirled it around like he was sticking it up. Ah, yes. The ASL symbol for insults. And KVASIR? I asked. Hearthstone pulled back his hands like he'd touched a hot stove. Then you know? Sam rapped her knuckles on the table to get my attention. Her hands flew in small, furious ASL gestures. Been trying to tell you. Loki was here. Long ago. Insult contest. Have to promise Aegir revenge. Alex and I think there is mead we can use.
I got this, I signaled back.
Amazingly, I felt like I had a plan. Not all the details, not even most of the details. More like I'd been spun around blindfolded, then somebody had put a stick in my hand and faced me in the general direction of the piñata and said, "Start swinging." But it was better than nothing.
Great Aegir! I jumped up in my seat and climbed onto the table before I could think about what I was doing. I will now explain to you why you should not kill us, and what it has to do with mead.
Silence fell around the table. 9 storm giantesses glared at me, as if considering all the different ways they could pitch, grasp, hurl, or freeze me to death. At the edge of my vision, Alex flashed me a message in ASL. Your fly is open. With superhuman willpower, I managed not to look down. I stayed focused on frowning Aegir and the single bean sprout dangling from his beard. The sea god grumbled.
I was just explaining how to sanitize a fermenter. This interruption had better be good.
It is, I promised,
slyly checking my zipper, which was not in fact open.
Our crew is sailing forth to bring Loki to justice. He has escaped his bonds, but we mean to find his ship, Naglfar, before it can sail at midsummer, recapture Loki, and put him back in chains. Help us, and you will have vengeance for that terrible flighting.
A puff of steam lifted Aegir's Panama hat, like the lid of a popcorn popper.
You dare speak of that disgrace? He demanded. Here, at the very table where it happened? I know, he flighted you, I yelled. He flighted you bad. You and all your godly guests got a mean flighting. He even flighted your mead. But we can defeat Loki and pay him back. I will challenge Loki myself.
Sam put her head in her hands. Alex stared at the ceiling and mouthed, "Wow. No." My other friends stared at me aghast, as if I'd just pulled the pin out of a grenade. I did that once on the battlefield in Valhalla before I fully understood how grenades worked. It had not ended well for the grenade or for me.
Aegir became deadly calm. He leaned forward, the lenses flashing in his golden glasses.
You, Magnus Chase, would challenge Loki to a flighting?
Yes. Despite my friend's reactions, I still felt certain this was the correct answer, even though I didn't quite understand what it meant.
I will flight the heck out of him!
Aegir stroked his beard, found the bean sprout, flicked it away.
How would you achieve this? Not even the gods could match Loki in a flighting. You would need some incredible secret weapon to give you an edge.
Perhaps even a fruity edge, I thought, because this was the other thing I was sure of, even if I didn't totally understand it. I stood up straight and announced in my deepest, quest-accepting voice,
I will use the mead of Kevin!
Alex joined Samira in the Bury Your Face in Your Hands club. Aegir narrowed his eyes.
You mean the mead of Kvasir?
Yes, I said. That.
Impossible,
Kolga protested. Her mouth dyed six different colors from her snow cones.
Father, don't believe them.
And, Great Aegir, I persisted, if you let us go, we'll even, bring you a sample of Kvasir's mead, since it is the only mead you can't brew yourself. My friends and the nine giantesses all turned to Aegir, waiting for his verdict. A thin smile played across the sea god's mouth. He looked like he'd managed to jump into a newly opened express lane at Whole Foods and finally scored his matcha smoothie.
Well, this changes everything, he said.
It does? I asked. He rose from his throne.
I would love to see Loki brought to justice, and in a flighting, no less. I would also love to get a sample of Kvasir's mead. And I would prefer not to kill you all, since I did grant you guest rights.
Great, I said. So you'll let us go?
Unfortunately, Aegir said, you're still Magnus Chase, and my wife wants you dead. If I let you go, she'll be mad at me. But if you were to escape, say, while I wasn't looking, and my daughters didn't manage to kill you in the attempt, well, I think we'd just have to consider that the will of the Norns.
He straightened his vest.
I am going to the kitchen to get some more mead now. I sure hope nothing unpleasant happens while I'm gone. Come along, Eldir.
The cook gave me one last smoldering leer.
Flight Loki once for Fimavang, will you?
Then he followed his master into the kitchen. As soon as the door closed, all nine daughters of Aegir rose from their seats and attacked.
Chapter 11. My sword takes you to, dramatic pause, Funky Town. Back when I was a regular mortal kid, I didn't know much about combat. I had some murky ideas that armies would line up, blow trumpets, and then march forward to kill one another in an orderly fashion. If I thought about Viking combat at all, I would envision some dude yelling, "Shield wall!" and a bunch of hairy blonde guys calmly forming ranks and merging their shields into some cool geometric pattern like a polyhedron or a Power Ranger Megazord. Actual battle was nothing like that. At least, not any version I'd ever been in. It was more like a cross between interpretive dance, lucha libre wrestling, and a daytime talk show fight.
The 9 sea giantesses fell upon us with a collective howl of glee. My friends were ready. Mallory Keene flipped onto grasping waves back and plunged her knives into the giantess's shoulders. Half-born Gunderson dual-wielded mead goblets, slamming Hevering in the face and Oon in the gut. TJ lost valuable time trying to load his rifle. Before he could fire, the lovely Hemeen Glava turned into a tidal wave and washed him across the hall. Hearthstone threw a runestone I hadn't seen before. It hit Bigly, I mean Bulgua, with a bright flash, liquefying her into a large, angry puddle. Sam's spear of light shimmered in her hand. She flew upward, just beyond reach, and began blasting giantesses with arcs of pure Valkyrie radiance. Meanwhile, Blitzen hopped around the chaos, distracting the 9 sisters with blistering fashion critiques like, "Your hem is too high! You've got a run in your stocking! That scarf does not go with your dress!" Kolga and Blode lunged at me from either side. I valiantly slipped under the table and tried to crawl away, but Blode grabbed me by the leg and pulled me out.
"Oh no," she snarled, her teeth dripping red. "I'm going to rip your soul from your body, Magnus Chase."
Then a silverback mountain gorilla crashed into her, knocked her to the floor, and ripped her face off. That sounds gross. Actually, when the gorilla swiped Blode's face, the giantess's whole head simply dissolved into salt water, soaking the kelp carpet. The gorilla turned toward me, his eyes mismatched brown and gold. He grunted at me impatiently, like, "Get up, you idiot! Fight!" The gorilla turned to face Kolga. I staggered backward. Magic explosions, beams of light, axes, swords, and bad fashion insults flew everywhere, answered by blasts of salt water, shards of ice, and globs of blood-tinted gelatin. My gut told me that the giantesses would be much more powerful if they combined forces, like they had when they sank our ship. We were only alive so far because each of the sisters was so intent on killing her own target. We had succeeded at being just that individually annoying. If the 9 giantesses started singing their weird music again, working together as a team, we would be done for. Even fighting them separately, we were in trouble. Every time a giantess got vaporized or reduced to a puddle, she quickly reformed. We were outnumbered 9-8. No matter how well my friends fought, the giantesses had the home court advantage, and also immortality, which was a pretty big fruity edge. We had to find a way to get on our boat and get out of here, back to the surface and far away. For that, we would need a distraction, so I called on the most distracting being I knew. I pulled the runestone from my neck chain. Jack sprang into sword form.
"Hey, senor. You know, I was thinking about that Riptide girl. Who needs her, right? There are plenty of other swords in the armory, and— Whoa! Aegir's palace? Awesome! What meat is he serving today?"
"Help!"
I yelled as Blode rose in front of me, her face reattached, her talons dripping blood.
"Sure," Jack said amiably. "But man, Aegir's Oktoberfest pumpkin spice mead is to die for."
He zipped over to blood-red hair, placing himself between my assailant and me.
"Hey, lady," Jack said. "Wanna dance?"
"No,"
Blode snarled. She tried to get around him, but Jack was nimble. Yes, and quick, though I'd never seen him jump over candlesticks. He swerved side to side, presenting his edge to the giantess and singing Funky Town. Blode seemed unwilling or unable to get past Jack's magical blade, which bought me a few seconds of safety as Jack disco danced.
"Magnus!"
Samira zoomed by, 10 feet above me.
"Prepare the ship!"
My heart sank. I realized my friends were playing interference for me, hoping that I could somehow make our ship ready to sail again. Sad, deluded friends. I ran back to the big banana. The ship lay on its side, its mast piercing the wall of water. The current outside must have been strong, because it pushed the ship along the carpet ever so slightly, the keel leaving gouge marks in the kelp. I touched the hull. Thankfully, the boat responded, collapsing into a handkerchief, which I clutched in my hand. If I could get all my friends together, maybe we could jump through the wall of water simultaneously and summon the ship as the current carried us away from here. Maybe the ship, being magic, would bring us back to the surface. Maybe we wouldn't drown or get crushed by the water pressure. That was a lot of maybes. Even if we managed it, the 9 daughters of Aegir had sucked us under the ocean once before. I didn't see why they couldn't do it again. Somehow, I needed to stop them from following us. I scanned the battle. Hearthstone raced past me, throwing runes at the giantesses trying to chase him. The rune seemed to do the best job. Every time it blasted a giantess, she turned into a puddle for several seconds. Not much, but it was something. I glanced at the walls of the feast hall and had an idea. "Hearth!" I yelled. I cursed my own stupidity. One of these days, I would get over my habit of yelling for my deaf friend's attention. I ran after him, ducking past Grasping Wave, who Mallory Keene was driving around the room with her dagger handles like a combat robot. I grabbed Hearth's sleeve for his attention. "That rune," I signed. "What?" "L-A-G-A-Z," he fingerspelled. "Water. Or..." He made a gesture I'd never seen. One hand horizontal, the fingers of the other hand trickling under it. I got the idea. Drip. Leak. Or maybe liquefy. "Can you do that to the wall?" I asked. "Or the ceiling?" Hearth's mouth quirked, which for him was a diabolical grin. He nodded. "Wait for my signal," I signed. Pitching Wave surged between us, yelling, "Roar!" And Hearthstone plunged back into the melee. I had to figure out how to separate my friends from the giantesses. Then we might be able to collapse part of the feast hall on top of the 9 sisters while we made our getaway. I doubted that would hurt our enemies, but it might at least surprise them and slow them down. The problem was, I didn't know how to break up the fight. I doubted I could blow a whistle and call for a jump ball. Jack flew back and forth, harassing giantesses with his deadly blade and his even deadlier rendition of a 70s disco classic. Kolga blasted sheets of ice across the carpet, causing half-born Gunderson to wipe out. Bulgua fought with TJ, Red Coral Sword against Bayonet. Grasping Wave finally managed to pull Mallory off her back. The giantess would have ripped her apart, but Blitzen tossed a dinner plate that smashed the giantess in the face. One of Blitz's unsung skills, he was killer at Dwarven Ultimate Frisbee. Heminglava lunged for Samira. She caught Sam's legs, but Alex lashed out with his garrote. The giantess suddenly lost several inches around her waistline. Actually, her entire waistline. She crumpled to the floor, neatly bisected, and dissolved into seafoam. Hearthstone caught my eye. "When the rune?" I wished I had an answer. My friends couldn't keep up the fight forever. I considered summoning the Peace of Frey, my super time-out power that blasts everybody's weapons out of their hands. But the giantesses weren't really using weapons, and I didn't think my friends would appreciate being disarmed. I needed help. Desperately. So, I did something that didn't come easy for me. I looked toward the watery ceiling and prayed earnestly, not snarkily. "Okay, Frey, Dad, please. I know I sounded ungrateful earlier about the bright yellow ship, but we're about to die down here, so if you've got any help you could send me, I'd really appreciate it. Amen. Love, Magnus. Magnus Chase, in case you were wondering." I winced. I really sucked at praying. I also wasn't sure what help a god of summer could send me at the bottom of Massachusetts Bay.
"Hello,"
said a voice right next to me. I leaped about a foot into the air, which I thought was pretty restrained under the circumstances. Standing at my side was a man in his late 50s, stout and sun-weathered as if he'd spent decades as a lifeguard. He wore a pale blue polo shirt and cargo shorts, and his feet were bare. His feathery hair and close-cropped beard were the color of honey, flecked with gray. He smiled like we were old friends, though I was sure I'd never seen him before. Hi, I said. Living in Valhalla, you get used to strange entities popping up out of nowhere. Still, this seemed like an odd time for a casual encounter.
I'm your grandfather, he offered.
Right, I said. Because what was I supposed to say? The guy looked nothing like Grandpa or Grandma Chase, but I figured he was talking about the other side of my family tree. The Vanir side. Now if I could just remember the name of Frey's dad, I would have been all set.
Hi, Grandpa. Your father can't do much in the ocean, said Grandpa Frey Dad. But I can. Want some help?
Yes, I said, which perhaps was foolish. I couldn't be sure this guy was who he said he was, and accepting help from a powerful being always puts you in their debt.
Great! He patted me on the arm. I'll meet you on the surface when this is all done, okay?
I nodded.
Mm-hmm.
My newfound grandfather strode into the midst of the battle.
Hello, girls! How's it going?
The fighting fizzled to a stop. The giantesses retreated warily toward the dinner table. My friend staggered and stumbled in my direction. Bloed bared her red-stained teeth.
Niord, you are not welcome here.
Niord, that's his name. I made a mental note to send him a card on Grandparents' Day. Was Grandparents' Day a thing with Vikings?
Oh, come now, Blodegada, the god said cheerfully. Can't an old friend get a cup of mead? Let's talk like civilized sea deities.
These mortals are ours, growled Grasping Wave. You have no right.
Ah, but you see, they are under my protection now, which means we're back to our old conflict of interests, eh?
The giantesses hissed and snarled. Clearly, they wanted to tear Niord to pieces, but were afraid to try.
Besides, Niord said, one of my friends here has a trick to show you. Don't you, Hearthstone?
Hearthstone locked eyes with me. I nodded. Hearth tossed the Lagat's rune straight up, past the Lost Soul chandelier. I didn't see how it could reach the ceiling 100 feet above, but the stone seemed to get lighter and lighter as it ascended. It hit the peak of the rafters, exploding into a blazing golden Lagatz, and the watery roof crashed inward, burying the giantesses and Niord in a million-gallon shower.
Now!
I yelled to my friends. We plowed together in a desperate group hug as the wave hit us. My handkerchief expanded around us. The collapsing hull squirted us into the deep, like toothpaste from a tube, and we shot toward the surface on our bright yellow Viking warship. Chapter 12. The Guy with the Feet. There's nothing like erupting from the depths of the ocean on a magical Viking ship. It sucks. A lot. My eyes felt like grapes that had been lagatzed. My ears popped with such force I thought I'd been shot in the back of the head. I gripped the rail, shivering and disoriented, as the big banana landed on the waves, wham, and knocked my jaw out of alignment. The sail unfurled on its own. The oars unlocked, pushed into the water, and began to row by themselves. We sailed under starry skies, the waves calm and glittering, no land to be seen in any direction.
The ship is self-driving, I noted.
Next to me, Niord popped into existence, looking no worse for being caught in the collapse of Aegir's hall. Njord chuckled.
Well, yes, Magnus, of course the ship is self-driving. Were you trying to row it the old-fashioned way?
I ignored my friends glaring at me. Maybe.
All you have to do is will the ship to take you where you want to go,
Njord told me.
Nothing else is required.
I thought about all that time I'd spent with Percy Jackson learning bowlines and mizzenmasts, only to find out the Viking gods had invented Google boats. I bet the ship would even magically assist me if I needed to fall off the mast.
Magnus?
Alex spat a clump of sea giantess hair out of his mouth. Wait, her mouth. I wasn't sure when it had happened, but I was pretty certain Alex had shifted gender.
Aren't you going to introduce us to your friend?
Right, I said. Everybody, this is Freydad. I mean, Njord. Blitzen scowled. He muttered under his breath.
Might have known.
Halfborn Gunderson's eyes widened.
Njord? God of ships? The Njord?
Then the berserker turned and vomited over the railing. TJ stepped forward, hands raised like, we come in peace.
Halfborn wasn't making an editorial comment, great Njord. We appreciate your help. He just has a head injury.
Njord smiled.
That's perfectly fine. You all should get some rest. I did what I could to ease your decompression sickness. But you're going to feel bad for a day or two. Also, you have blood trickling from your nose. Oh, and coming out of your ears.
I realized he was talking about everyone. We were leaking red like Bloh de Cotta. But at least all my friends seemed to be in one piece.
So, Njord, said Mallory, wiping her nose. Before we rest, are you sure those 9 giantesses aren't going to pop up again any minute and, you know, destroy us?
No, no, he promised. You're under my protection and safe for the present. Now perhaps you would give me some time to talk with my grandson.
Alex picked a last strand of giantess hair off her tongue.
No problem, Freydad. Oh, and by the way, guys, my pronouns are she and her now. It's a new day.
Hooray for me being right. Samira stepped forward, her fists clenched. Her wet hijab clung to her head like an affectionate octopus.
Magnus, down in the feast hall, do you realize what you agreed to? Do you have any idea?
Njord raised his hand.
My dear, perhaps you'd let me discuss that with him. Dawn is coming. Shouldn't you eat your suhoor meal?
Sam gazed east, where the stars were beginning to fade. She worked her jaw muscles.
I suppose you're right, though I don't feel much like it. Anybody want to join me?
TJ shouldered his rifle.
Sam, when it comes to eating, I always have your back. Let's go below and see if the galley is still in one piece. Anybody else?
Yep.
Mallory eyed the sea god. For some reason, she seemed fascinated by his bare feet.
We'll give Magnus some family time.
Alex followed, doing her best to steady Halfborn Gunderson. Maybe it was just my imagination, but before Alex went down the ladder, she gave me a look like, you okay? Or maybe she was just wondering why I was so weird, as per usual. That left only Blitz and Hearth, who were fussing with each other's outfits. Hearth's scarf had somehow gotten tied around his arm like a sling. Blitzen's ascot had wrapped around his head like a fancy do-rag. They were trying to help while swatting each other away, thus not accomplishing much.
Dwarf and elf.
Njord's tone was relaxed, but my friends immediately stopped their fussing and faced the god.
Stay with us, Njord said. We should confer.
Hearthstone looked agreeable enough,
but Blitz scowled even deeper. We settled on the foredeck, which was the only place where we wouldn't get tripped by the self-rowing oars, bonked by the boom, or strangled by the magical rigging. Niord sat with his back to the railing, his legs far apart. He wriggled his toes as if to get them a good tan. This didn't give the rest of us a lot of room to sit, but since Niord was the god and he'd just saved us, I figured he'd earned the privilege of manspreading. Blitz and Hearth sat side by side across from the god. I squatted against the prow, though I'd never done well sitting backward in a moving vehicle. I hoped I wasn't going to become the second crew member to vomit in the god's presence.
"Well," Niord said, "this is nice."
I felt like my head had been run through a Play-Doh press. I'd been drenched in mead and salt water. I'd barely touched my vegetarian option meal, and my stomach was devouring itself. Drops of blood from my nose splattered in my lap. Otherwise, yeah, it was real nice. Sometime during our ascent, Jack had returned to pendant form. He hung from my neck chain, buzzing against my sternum as if humming a message. Compliment his feet? I must have either imagined it or misunderstood him. Maybe Jack meant compliment his feet.
Thanks again for your help, Grandad, I said.
Niord smiled.
Just call me Niord. Grandad makes me feel old.
I figured he'd been alive for 2,000 or 3,000 years, but I didn't want to insult him.
Right, sorry. So, did Frey send you, or did you just happen to be in the neighborhood?
Oh, I hear all desperate prayers spoken at sea.
Niord wriggled his toes. Was it my imagination, or was he intentionally showing off his feet? I mean, they were well manicured. No calluses, not a fleck of dirt or tar. Toenails trimmed, buffed to perfection. Zero toe gunk or weird hobbit foot fur. But still.
I was happy to assist, Niord continued. Aegir and I go back a long way. He and Ran and their daughters represent the raging forces of nature. The sea's raw power, blah, blah, blah. Whereas I...
You're the god of fishing, Blitzen said.
Niord frowned.
Other things as well, Mr. Dwarf.
Please call me Blitz, said Blitz. Mr. Dwarf was my father.
Hearthstone grunted impatiently, the way he often does when Blitzen is about to get himself killed by a deity.
Niord is god of many things, he signed. Sailing, shipbuilding.
Exactly, Niord said,
apparently having no difficulty with Hearth's ASL.
Trading, fishing, navigation, any occupation that involves the ocean. Even farming, since the tides and storms affects crop growing. Aegir is the nasty, brutal side of the ocean. I'm the guy you pray to when you want the sea to work for you.
Humph, Blitz said.
I didn't know why he was being antagonistic. Then I remembered that his father, Beely, had died checking the chains that bound Fenris Wolf on his island. Beely's slashed and torn clothing had eventually washed up on the shores of Nida Valir. No safe homeward voyage for him. Why would Blitzen consider the sea anything but cruel? I wanted to let Blitz know that I understood, that I was sorry, but he kept his gaze firmly on the deck.
Anyway, Niord said, Aegir and his family have been my, competitors for centuries. They try to drown mortals. I try to save them. They destroy ships. I build better ships. We're not enemies, exactly. But we do keep each other on our toes.
He emphasized the word toes, stretching out his feet a little more. This was now officially getting weird.
Jack's voice buzzed in my head more forcefully.
Compliment his feet.
You have beautiful feet, Grand, Niord. The god beamed.
Oh, these old things? Well, you're kind. Did you know I once won a beauty contest with my feet? The prize was my wife.
I glanced at Blitz and Hearth to see if I was imagining this entire conversation. Please, Hearth signed with zero enthusiasm. Tell us the story.
Well, if you insist.
Niord gazed at the stars, perhaps recalling his glory days in the foot beauty pageant circuit.
Most of the story isn't important. The gods killed this giant, Thiassi. His daughter Skadi demanded vengeance. Blood killing, blah blah blah. To prevent further war and stop the blood feud, Odin agreed to let Skadi marry a god of her choosing.
Blitzen scowled.
And she chose you?
No!
Niord clapped his hands in delight.
Oh, it was so funny. You see, Odin only let Skadi choose her husband by looking at the god's feet.
Why? I asked. Why not noses or elbows? Niord paused.
I never considered that. Not sure. Anyway, Skadi figured the most handsome husband would have the most beautiful feet, right? So we all stood behind a curtain, and she went down the line looking for Balder, because he was always the one everyone thought was the most handsome.
He rolled his eyes and mouthed, "Overrated."
But I had the most beautiful feet of all the gods, as Odin must have known. Skadi picked me. You should have seen the look on her face when she pulled back the curtain and saw who she had to marry.
Blitzen crossed his arms.
So, Odin used you to trick the poor lady. You were a booby prize.
Of course not.
Niord looked more startled than angry.
It was a great match.
I'm sure it was, I said, anxious to prevent Blitzen from getting turned into a dinghy, or whatever other punishment the ship god could deal out. You two lived happily ever after? Niord shifted his back against the rail.
Well, no. We separated shortly thereafter. She wanted to live in the mountains. I liked the beach. Then Skadi had an affair with Odin. Then we got a divorce. But that's not the point. My feet on the day of the contest, they were amazing. They won the hand of Skadi, the beautiful ice giantess.
I was tempted to ask if he only won her hand, or the rest of her too. But I decided against it. Blitzen stared at me. He twitched his hands like he wanted to sign something ugly about Niord, but then remembered that Niord could read ASL. He sighed and stared at his lap. Niord frowned.
What's wrong, Mr. Dwarf? You don't look impressed.
Oh, he is, I promised. Just speechless. We can all tell that your feet are very important to you.
What is your beauty secret? Hearthstone asked politely.
Several centuries of standing in the surf, Niord confided. It smoothed my feet into the perfectly sculpted masterpieces you see today. That and regular pedicures with a paraffin wax treatment.
He wiggled his shiny toenails.
I was debating about buffing or no buffing, but I think the buffing really makes those piggies shine.
I nodded and agreed that he had very shiny piggies. I also wished I didn't have such an odd family.
In fact, Magnus, said Niord, that is one of the reasons I wanted to meet you.
To show me your feet?
He laughed.
No, silly.
By which I was pretty sure he meant yes.
To give you some advice.
On how to buff his toenails? Blitz asked.
No.
Niort hesitated.
Although I could do that, I have two important bits of wisdom that may help you on your quest to stop Loki.
We enjoy bits of wisdom, Hearth signed.
The first is this, Niord said. To reach the Ship of the Dead, you must pass through the borderlands between Niflheim and Jotunheim. This is harsh territory. Mortals can perish from the cold in seconds. If that does not kill you, the giants and draugrs will.
Blitz grumbled.
I'm not enjoying this particular bit of wisdom.
Ah, but there is one safe harbor, Niord said. Or at least one potentially safe harbor. Or at least one harbor where you might not be instantly killed.